is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now. I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now.
So long I've been waiting, waiting for you. Oh yeah. Now the time has come when it's between me and you. The train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now.
5 o'clock train on CHUO. Today on the show we have Student Appeal Officer Extraordinaire Zachary Fouchard. We'll be right back.
Lord, I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now. I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now.
Every day I pray for this little hour. Now the time has come, and I want you to stand by me. Because the train is coming, baby, and we are leaving on the train. And we will roam this land where we all will be free. Lord,
I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now. I said the train is coming, baby. I said the train is coming now.
Bonjour, ici Alan Rock, recteur de l'Université d'Ottawa, l'Université canadienne. Hello, this is Alan Rock, president of the University of Ottawa, Canada's university. Composez le numéro du poste que vous voulez joindre maintenant ou demeurez en ligne. Enter the extension number you wish to reach now or stay on the line.
You've recognized Alan Rock's introduction. It's the 5 o'clock train on CHUO 89.1 FM every Thursdays from 5 to 6. I am your co-host Mireille Gervais. I am the only host in studio this week. Denis Rancourt is away in Europe giving a conference. Denis Rancourt is my co-host. So I'm doing this show this week and I'm very happy to be doing this show, which is very special to me. I have with me in studio my colleague and friend, Zachary Fouchard. Zachary, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Zach is a very special person for many different reasons, a very special person for the hundreds of students he's helped at the Student Appeal Center while he worked there for the past 2 years, 2 years and 1 month. Zach started working at the Student Appeal Center with me in May of 2008. The Student Appeal Center is a service that's offered by the Student Federation of the University of Ottawa to any students who are experiencing problems with the administration of the university or who wish to file a complaint, who need guidance, who need help with this bureaucracy and the bureaucratic university we study within. So Zach has been doing that full-time since May of 2008. He is a self-proclaimed ethicist and a Foucault scholar, a master's student in public ethics at St. Paul's University. And he has decided to remove himself completely from the U of O community, from the SFUO, from the University of Ottawa, from St. Paul's University. That's a big, big move. And I'm wondering if you can begin by letting us know, what do you mean you're removing yourself from a community? You're quitting your job?
I'm quitting it all. I'm feeling I need some kind of change. And I've been reflecting on those three areas. I work for the Appeal Center, so I'm an appeal officer and an employee of the Student Federation. But that means I'm also a member of just the University of Ottawa community at large. And then because I study at St. Paul's, which is sort of that the affiliated campus, the two schools are federated, I'm also a member of that community as well. But the more I live as a member of those communities, the more I'm just feeling with my back against the wall. I'm trying to avoid the word oppressed, but that's essentially it. I'm tired of being shut down.
Okay, but hang on. We have, now I'm going to play devil's advocate because I know very well what you go through working with you every day. But you work for the Student Federation. The Student Federation is the union of students. It's about empowering students, making sure there's student power on campus, making sure we live in safe spaces and that everyone feels good. And you don't, I mean, what are you talking about?
Well, that's how I felt when I first arrived as a second year student. You and I went to high school together, and so when I learned that you were doing this job at the Appeal Center, I sort of took an interest into it, but then I sort of started to think, well, you know, working for the Student Union, or the Student Federation, as they like to call themselves, I thought, you know, this is an area where you can really be doing some good, because right off the bat, you have an organized group representing students, and at the same time representing them in opposition to, say, the university administration when they try to, it's their job to sort of impose the rules and regulations of the institution. But if you actually read these rules, you see how much they're essentially just trying to control each and every individual. So I sort of thought, yeah, working for a student union, that's the kind of thing I want to be doing. And then 2.5 years later, I'm thinking, I'm fighting the union as much as I am fighting the university itself.
You mean you're fighting your employer?
Exactly. That's what makes it even worse. You know, these are the people that I work for who have given me some kind of authority to say, you know, you can go out and help these students, and we're going to back you up. And then I go out there into the front line, and I'm, you know, helping students. If you stick with that war analogy, I find them, you know, lying on the ground without limbs or all cut up. And then I turn around to see where my backup is, and there's nobody.
You're all alone.
I'm all alone.
Okay, but hang on. That makes no sense. We're talking about Seamus Wolfe, Roxane Dubois, Ted Horton. Like, these people were elected by students. They're our heroes.
Yeah, and they're heroes elected to a certain position, and they have their responsibilities, and they have to run the organization. But I guess I don't know really what goes on, but they get boggled down in working for a student union, because it's a large organization representing a lot of students. But no, you know, here I am just giving them too much credit. It doesn't matter how many students you're representing. Like, why aren't these people sort of doing their jobs? Now, as I'm saying that, I don't want to sound like the Fulcrum, that English newspaper, who it's its hobby to insult and to bring down the Student Federation for their shortcomings. I don't want to sound like I'm just ranting, but when I'm working a very difficult job, which is literally on the front line of the mandate of the student union to help students, and I don't see anyone there with me, I rather see them locked up in their offices doing their paperwork, trying to organize the institution. I sort of think to myself, well, you know, is this system working? And then when I look to see, well, maybe, you know, they just have to put all their energies into really running the organization. And then I look to the organization and see, how well run is it? Well, it's horrible.
It's so bad.
It's a little boys club.
Mm.
Little. And it's a clique. It's a club.
Mm.
And it technically, in a legal sense, it's a corporation. So how can you have a boys club that's actually incorporated? It makes no sense to me.
It's just reproducing what we see in society rather than, you know, fighting it effectively.
Yeah, and I'm getting just so disillusioned. I don't know what to do. And, you know, what am I supposed to do? Just bring this to the attention of my employer? You know, I'd like to have a sit down and talk about how I feel about how the, you know, I don't feel properly supported and represented as I'm doing this really difficult job. I don't know. I'm not down.
Okay. Well, I would love it if you could get into maybe a little, whatever example you feel comfortable sharing, so that our listeners understand. We're just talking generally, we don't feel supported, or I say we. Mm. You don't feel supported. Do you have an example of something that might have happened?
Well, it's hard to find an example because we never work together. I'm given all this freedom and opportunity to sort of take on my cases the way I want and work them the way I want. But in given that freedom, there's this presupposition that I'm not supposed to bring anything to the attention of my employer. Mm. They're too busy for this kind of stuff. Mm. So I'm left alone to take care of it. Don't come to me with your worries. Now, I'm sure someone would say, well, no, we're so available to hear you. Come and book an appointment and come sit down with us. But
when you do with certain people, you wait about 2 months before you get a meeting.
Yes. And then you get to that meeting and you sort of say, well, this is the particular case I'm working on. I would love it if, you know, to have a practical example, we're dealing with this administrator that's kind of given us a hard time. Maybe you could sit down with him and try to smooth him or her over, getting to sort of see some of the arguments of the student's case. But even then, those are often empty promises. Yeah, I'll get on that. And then nothing ever really happens because it's technically not their job. It's my job.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I can't do all of that stuff.
Well, one example that comes to mind that's super, super recent is that if there are any university center employees listening to this show, you've known that the ventilation system is currently being renovated or repaired in the university center. And it means that a lot of our offices, we've been relocated to the third floor temporarily, are without not only air conditioning, but ventilation altogether. And the man who is responsible, who is the director of community life services, Marc Duval, has been walking around. He had prepped us about this. He came to tell us that this was going to happen. And he told me on multiple occasions that he was going to send all his staff home. The university offices were closed, access service and career services and community life services. And Marc Duval had to plead with the SFUO executive to let us go home so that we could go home. It was too hot. It was against health standards for us to work in these offices. But to this day, and this is like the end of it, right? Because all week it's been happening. It's been hot. We've had no air in our offices. Not an official word, not an official statement. Yes, you can go home. Some people, like us, just did what was good for our health and worked from home. But still, the organization did not take a stance. They refused to, you know, give permission to us to go home.
Well, they didn't even want to deal with the problem. They just sort of pretended it didn't exist or that it wasn't a problem, which is funny too because they recently sent out an email with some kind of, you know, status report on the construction, and it was written by the university, and it was sort of saying that, you know, it is quite hot and it's going to be a little uncomfortable, but you sort of have to bear it. In fact, the words were, you're going to have to work with thermal discomfort. What the fuck that means, I have no idea. but the point is, we're getting this report from the university, and we're also the university's each services are getting their support from their employers, and we're getting nothing from our employers. Mm-hmm. It's what's ironic about it is my job as an appeal officer is to sort of help students in their opposition to the university. What's often the problem is that they don't agree with a certain decision, so I'm having to confront the university. And yet in here, the university is acting in good faith, and it's my employer that is not.
Yeah, that really baffled me too. It was just absolutely unhealthy to work in those conditions, and we were never given permission to.
And you know, it also depends on who was in there. You know, if there was someone who was more closely tied to that clique that runs the SFUO, they would have gotten some attention. But we have our reputations. We have we're those two individuals that are too radical for campus, who are always yelling and screaming, trying to defend students, which is not what we do. You will not see us yelling and screaming on campus. Yet that is sort of by extension what our reputation is. And then they sort of think, well, I'm safer just not talking to these people. And that's what we are. The SFUO is an organization of certain small groups that don't talk to each other, which I'm so frustrated with because that replicates the exact problem that you have with the university administration. That miscommunication between small factions, or lack of communication between, say, the department and a professor and the overall faculty, that's the kind of stuff that we're having to smooth out in our cases, get one person to talk to another, so that everyone's on the same page. So I'm, again, having to fight a battle on two fronts. I'm not going to win this. I'm going to lose. I'm going to go crazy, Mir.
Well, you touch on something that I think students realize and a lot of people know, is this whole idea of the clique. And we saw a lot of things that almost came close to being just pure harassment. For example, during the CFS Yes or No campaign, where you had people from different cliques following other people around campus and that kind of stuff. And it created an environment of fear, and where debate was, you know, borderline violence, or at least verbal violence. And what do you think is the impact on an employee like you when you know that your supervisor, your direct supervisor, the executive who supervises you, when you know their political affiliations, does that make you, like, what's the impact on you? Do you know what I mean?
It forces you to choose a political affiliation. Mm. Not that it is possible to not have one. But you can sort of try to cultivate your own. That's what I've always tried to do. I don't want to side with many other individuals. What I want to do is I want to side with the ideas that I come up with and the ones that I sort of express. I'm the kind of guy who thinks of an idea and spits it right out. And maybe that's a really dumb idea, but I'll spit it out and then we'll deal with it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to sort of affiliate more with my own methods for coming up with ideas and expressing myself. And you know, the SFU is run by, as I'm sure many student associations are run by sort of political factions. Like, to draw a black and white example, which is not very close to reality, is you have liberals against conservatives. And I think what is the driving force between the strength of these cliques and the fact that they still exist is the fact that, well, there's growing political conservatism on campuses and in society, Canadian society in general. I mean, we have a conservative government right now, which is sort of a change from the past 10 years. So you have liberal cliques and conservative cliques fighting for power to be able to run this organization. And I think the consequence of that is that the liberal cliques, who just so happen to have the power right now, they're the ones in charge right now, they feel that they can sort of fudge the numbers a little bit just to make sure that they remain in power, in power.
Mm.
Scary.
Absolutely. We've seen corruption. We've seen corruption recently within the recent SFU elections, where one of our ex-co-workers, Julien de Bellefeuille, who had been hired as the elections officer, had to quit and denounce the fact that he had been asked to simply participate in corruption in helping certain candidates and not others, and in being more strict in imposing sanctions or not, depending on who the candidate was. And we worked with Julien.
Yeah, I felt for him when he lived that experience. That was horrible. Because you end up working with these people over time, and mm-hmm. you do develop relationships. These are working relationships. It doesn't matter if you have different, you know, ideas about how things should be run, different political associations. You do develop friends. And then I think in that particular instance, Julien left not out of principle for what he was asked to do, but because he couldn't work with these friends who had asked him to sell out his soul.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, Julien, we're thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
We're in an interview with Zachary Fouchard, soon-to-be ex-student appeal officer with the SFUO. He has many grievances against the SFUO and has a lot to say. He's also a member of the Ombudsperson Committee. The Ombudsperson is currently being hired here at the University of Ottawa. We're going to take a short music break, but when we come back, we will talk more about that. The Ombudsperson, what is the Ombudsperson? What is going on with that? We're going to listen to a Ryan Dahl song. Zach, maybe you want to introduce it since you chose it.
Sure. Mir and I went to a concert recently. We got to see Ryan Dahl play in Ottawa. He's a local Canadian a Canadian musician from BC who's played in bands like Age of Electric. His band used to be called Limblifter, and now he's released a solo album. So this is the song Shut Down.
You're listening to the 5 o'clock train.
Showing up in every mirror. Let's keep this mum's the word.
Musicians and filmmakers, are you looking for a challenge? The Ottawa International Film Festival is excited to present a fusion of film and music in the form of a music video challenge. Musicians and filmmakers from the Ottawa-Gatineau area will have the opportunity to work together and produce a short film as part of the Ottawa International Film Festival's first annual competition. This is your chance to rock Ottawa. The deadline for filmmakers and bands to apply is May 30th, so get your creative juices flowing. To get more details, head over to oiff.ca, visit us on Facebook, or call us at 613-218-3470.
When developing an addiction, please make it an ethical one. You know, a Bridgehead Coffee House is a good place to start. Bridgehead's coffee is fairly traded, organic, and shade-grown. Bridgehead itself is a company with ethics. They've made a commitment to social responsibility, what it means to people, the community, and the environment. Need another reason to develop an addiction to fresh coffee, healthy food, and homemade baked goods? Bridgehead is an Ottawa-based Canadian company. So visit any one of the 10 Bridgehead locations for the most sustainable latte in the city.
You're listening to the 5 o'clock train on CHUO 89.1 FM. We are your weekly local campus news, social activism, world stuff. We talk about all sorts of things, but tune in. It's always very interesting.
What I would do for a sustainable latte.
Fuck. The ethicist has spoken. So you just heard Zachary Fouchard. We're in interview with him. He is a student appeal officer extraordinaire, but not for long. He's had it with the U of O, with the SFUO, with student appeals. He's moving on. And if you're interested in this show, you'll be able to listen to it again, his lovely voice, because we blog our shows. You'll be able to stream this show by checking out trainradio.blogspot.com. You can listen to some past shows too. You can send us a comment. You can send us an email. Denis and I would be really happy to hear from you. We do this show every week. So back in studio with Zachary, and what I said before the break might have been confidential information. Zachary is a member of the Ombuds Committee, the highly secretive, confidential, be careful.
Don't say anything.
Don't say anything. Now, the ombudsperson, it's a historic thing. It's been years and years coming. Students have tried to get an ombudsperson on campus for years. Mm-hmm. There's been referendums. There's been talk about it. And finally, when Alan Rock came in to save our university, he decided it was time for the ombudsperson. It would make things look good. That's my impression.
It was pretty obvious because the U of O is one of the last universities to have an ombudsperson.
It was about time.
Yeah.
So what we did is we actually, this was an initiative of the Student Appeal Center. We proposed the first draft of the terms of reference for the ombudsperson, and that included an ombuds committee. This committee would be in charge of overseeing the ombudsperson's activities and hiring the ombudsperson. So that's the first step, basically, in this whole process. And Zach was selected to be a part of that committee.
Mm-hmm. And my first interest was to be able to sit on this committee to figure out, well, what does an ombudsperson mean for us? Because, well, you know, the idea, the word itself has its history and its functions, but we had sort of the power to choose its mandate, what you can do, what you can't do, and what, in an ideal sense, you would react, how you would react to certain situations. The word ombuds is a Swedish word meaning the people. So it's essentially a person working for the people, the populace. In a university setting, that would mean the students, but it would also mean certain employees. You know, when I hear the word people, I'm just thinking all of those people that have no power.
Yeah.
So, you know, the cleaning staff,
yeah.
Part-time professors, even certain professors, you know, who are constantly intimidated into following the rules very, very strictly without ever thinking about where they come from and what they mean. So essentially, I sort of said, hey, well, here's an opportunity to find someone and create an office where someone can sort of speak on behalf of these unfortunate people.
And what has it been like? I mean, you hold meetings?
Well, we had to start with... when I got involved, they had sort of taken that terms of reference that we had written and then just added on to it and sort of, you know, piggybacked it. So when I got involved, I was sort of more of like the hiring committee, even though it was still that committee. So our job was to go through candidates and do interviews.
So you got to interview the future ombudsperson,
most likely. And that was a fun process because you got to meet a lot of people who would do a great job. And it sort of, you know, filled me with a little bit of hope. I was skeptical at first, but, you know, you get into Tabaret Hall and you sit in this big luxurious boardroom and you think, hey, yeah, we're really doing some good here for the people.
Are you serious?
Oh, I bought in like a big cupcake there. I took a big bite.
So who from the administration represents the university on this committee that is half students and half admin?
Yeah, and that was the interesting part. It was half and half. So you had your university reps, and then there was two SFUO reps and two from the GSAD, the Graduate Student Association. And that is actually sort of unprecedented in the way other universities have done it. I think the thing that stands out the most is that the students pay 50-50 for the budget.
Mm-hmm. Which is normal.
Is it normal?
Oh, absolutely. To ensure independence and impartiality.
Okay. Yeah, I was sort of under the impression that wasn't...
Mm-hmm. No, that's usually within the norms. It's supposed to be a person who works equally for everyone without bias.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which, and it's such a gray line because they're not a university representative in a strict sense, yet they do represent the university.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really an entre-deux. They have to play both sides of the game. So it'll be really interesting if and when this job and this office is created, how this person is going to take on that big challenge of representing both sides.
Absolutely.
And the other funny thing or interesting thing about the numbers person is the extent of their power. Essentially, their job is to simply recommend things.
Yeah.
So they don't really have any power of decision. They can sort of look over a case that has gone through all the regular channels of appeal, let's say. So they've worked with us and they've worked with the university and they weren't able to figure something out. And then the ombudsperson gets to step in and say, well, I sort of say do this.
Mm.
But that's as far as it goes. The university still retains the power to say yes and no.
But don't you think that having an ombudsperson will simply give yet another level of illusion of justice on campus?
Well, definitely. It's another level of administrative appeal. And in terms of the illusion of justice, I don't know what kind of justice is reality. I've never seen it. I've never touched it before.
Hmm.
Sure, it adds one more step. Maybe this person, whoever's going to take this job, is going to take it upon themselves to really act as an entre-deux, as a between two sides, and really try to at least express the kind of problems, bring them out into the public, these kinds of problems that exist within our campus, because most people don't hear about them, right? Like, constantly in our job at the Appeal Center, we're sort of told, no, that doesn't really happen, or there aren't that many problems. So if the ombudsperson could... give more public information about the kind of things that happen on campus, maybe that would be a benefit, despite it being just one more bureaucratic step in the whole grievance process.
Mm.
Maybe.
Okay, so tell us who got hired.
I don't know.
Trying to track you. We're going to get the scoop on the 5 o'clock train.
No, I don't think anyone has been hired yet. So.
Okay, so it should be coming in the fall? Is that the plan?
That's the buzz on campus. We'll have to see in September what happens.
Okay. So anything else to say about the ombudsperson?
No. It was a good experience, but, you know, it just left me unchanged. And that's what I sort of came to the Appeal Center and to Ottawa U to sort of do, change my opinions and hopefully in a dramatic and a radical way. And it's only been the negative experiences that have sort of changed me in that way.
Mm.
And as a consequence, I'm sort of taking a step back and that's essentially, you know, what we wanted to talk about here today.
For sure. Well, let's move on then to university appeals. And that's the big chunk of your life and what we do mm-hmm. for the past 2 years. Now, you're talking about negative experiences. Can you contextualize that in the context of student appeals? What do you mean, negative experience?
Definitely. I love the Appeal Center so much. It's my little baby. It's our baby. It's mm-hmm. our child that we've sort of created together. We've allowed it to grow up. But it's a love-hate relationship because the kinds of things we see are quite heavy. So negative experiences can often be just you meet a student who has had a negative experience. Something very general would be like, let's say they just had a really bad exam period because of some personal event in their life. Maybe it's just me, but I can't help but sympathize with someone who's gone through that and mm-hmm. now has to pick up the pieces and try to write everything. Maybe they failed some exams and they're going to have to try to plead for deferrals. And I say plead as in I will see someone and say, well, here's the appeal process, let's go put in an appeal. But if you want to talk really, like, the real word here is pleading. You're essentially begging for some kind of help because you dealt with a situation that was out of your control and you did your best, yet you still failed. That's the negative experience. I hate to tell a student, well, you know, we'll put a letter together and we'll prepare for a meeting and we'll go put in an appeal. But essentially what we're doing is begging for help.
What hurts me the most, what I'm seeing more and more, we have, students are suffering from mental health problems. Mm. More and more, we see it all the time. There's anxiety problems, there's depression, the list goes on. People are struggling with so much. And what I think is absolutely horrific is to ask a student who can barely get up in the morning to get a doctor's note, fill out the proper form, get your family doctor to fill out this form so that Dr. Kilby can review your medical note, who can agree whether or not you had a valid reason, and then you have to file an appeal and you have to make sure it was sent to the right person and that they didn't lose it, and then follow up with them because they don't respond to your email. Like, so much bureaucracy on someone who's already sick and mm-hmm. has difficulty just like getting up. And that really gets me.
Yeah.
Every time. It's such bullshit.
And then the university replies, well, you know, we are a very large institution. We can't hold your hand. We can't do all of these things for you. You need to take your responsibilities in hand. Well, these aren't responsibilities in that sense. These are tasks that one has to undertake that are quite difficult and could very well be helped out. Mm. There's a middle ground between doing it like filing your grievances or your getting your doctor's note or whatever all on your own, or having the university do it all for you. We're not asking for either or. There's got to be some kind of help communication. And I find in universities where these negative experiences are less prominent, you have a little bit more of that. Mm. There's less bureaucratic steps. There is someone sitting at a desk waiting for someone in that type of situation to show up and say, hey, okay, I'll take care of this. You do this, and I'll do this. We'll meet halfway in the middle, and it should be okay.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about bureaucracy and the campus and the fact that it's a large institution, rumor has it that the vision plan here at the U of O is to reach 45,000 students by 2015. So it looks like things are only going to get worse. I don't know. I mean, it must come with increase in staff. You cannot.
Who knows?
Let's cut professors, increase students.
Exactly, because that's the moneymaker, right? Mm-hmm. That's where your source of income. And then the more you increase the number of students, the more you distance the student population, the populace as a whole, from those in power that have the ability to sort of help us out. It sounds funny to say we need help, because it takes away from your autonomy. But let's face it, we're communal beings. We need to work together to be able to sort these kinds of problems out. I hate the idea that it's a student's responsibility to get through their whole degree all on their own. Why? Because when they finish their degree, they're going to enter in society and again be all alone, and then find employment with some kind of organization, and then be completely individualized and compartmentalized and all alone. it seems like that's what the university now has a role in teaching you, how to be self-sufficient, alone, and not too depressed. Well,
or to hide your depression in a way that you're still functional.
Exactly. I do that quite well.
Yeah, it's so bad.
If that's the case, you're going to have less than a 50% chance of those who are going to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest are going to be left saying, well, I can't do that. I need a little help. And then they feel humiliated.
Yes, it's an insult to need to file an appeal. It's something to be ashamed of, you know, rather than to be proud that you're able to stand up for what you know is right.
Yeah.
It's more of a shameful thing. I do not fit into the system as perfectly as I'm told I should.
Yeah. And that's why another reason I like our job is we know that off the bat. So one of the first things we'll tell someone is, thank you for coming here.
Mm.
This is great. You know what? You should be thanking yourself, because now you are taking this in hand and you're going to be able to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute. But don't worry, we're going to help you do it so that you don't have to stand up alone. If you can only get up your body halfway, we'll thrust you up and then you'll be standing up on your two feet and then you're off on your own. And that's a very simple method of working with another person. Mm. I wonder why we can't do that more often in terms of administration.
Well, when we're talking about administration, one of the things that had you, I think, from my perspective, really one of the breaking points, one of the things that you just couldn't handle from the beginning and up until now, are meetings. Meetings with the administration, meetings where you attempt to plead your case face-to-face, meetings where your student who you've worked with for weeks and weeks is being questioned on accusations of academic fraud, meetings.
Yeah.
What was it about those meetings that hurt you so much?
It was just that atmosphere and the attitude with which the meetings were held that sort of reiterated the large asymmetry of power that exists between the person who has the decision, the power of decision, and that person who's making a request. Again, it's that situation where someone's asking for help and is humiliated in asking for it. When you're working with a student, we're working in our appeal center, we have our own space, we've sort of evened the playing field a little bit, at least theoretically. We're sort of saying we can anticipate what the university's arguments are, what the counter-arguments to our request, our appeal are going to be, and it sort of brings the level of power a little closer together. All they are arguments, and those arguments can be counter-argued, can be transcended. However, when you get into a meeting, you're not dealing with arguments anymore.
Mm.
You're dealing with a person who has body language, who has, you know, spoken verbal language, and is often the first action taken in a meeting is to lay out and specify what the asymmetry of power is. You are here asking for me. You better watch what you say. You better watch how you say it, because it's all going to depend on that, whether I'm going to grant you yes or no. And it's like we're back in the medieval ages. There's the king, there's the subject, and then I'm sort of left asking myself, wait, what am I doing? Am I kind of like the jester here?
Well, while we're on the topic of meetings, I just want to publicly say that there are a few that stand out in the array of absolutely horrible meetings. Telfer School of Management Committee of Inquiry meetings are known to be pretty brutal, with committee members rolling their eyes, shaking their heads, obviously completely disbelieving students. But the iron fist goes to none other than the Vice Dean of Social Science, Madame Cécile Cadard, who recently, during a meeting where a student was accused of academic fraud, explaining medical conditions, crying heavily, I attempted to defend my student, and Cécile Cadard proceeded to hand shush me. She gave me the hand.
You got the hand.
I got the hand as a way of letting me know that I was not even allowed to say a word, not allowed to defend my student. I was just there, just to be there. We are, just bodies. If we are people with thoughts, and if we attempt to speak to defend students, that's, you know, that needs to be shut down right away.
And that's why I say we're sort of the jester, because what other service do we offer except for the entertainment of those in power?
Mm.
Because we're not allowed to say anything about or in reference to the student who we're standing next to. And it's funny, because that is actually, I don't know if it's actually written down there somewhere, but it's a common practice. Yet some individuals choose not to follow it. There are key... You know, if there was an Iron Fist Award, maybe there could be a Velvet Glove Award as well, where there are some administrators who, you know, invite us to sort of speak.
Yes.
And the moment they do, always my first reaction is, great, I'm going to speak, but I'm not going to represent the student. They're right there. They can represent themselves. They're quite good at it. I've prepped them. They're good to go. But I would love to join this conversation so that I'm not just here for your amusement.
Well, we're talking with Zachary Fouchard. This is the 5 o'clock train. We're going to go to another Ryan Dahl song called Awfulizing, and we'll be right back. This is CHUO 89.1 FM.
We race you in circles. Headed for the storm drain.
the 30th, the Ottawa International Children's Festival takes over the Breton Flats Park with fun for kids of all ages. Come explore the world-renowned inflatable Luminaria sculpture, a giant labyrinth where you'll be blown away by all the colors, lights, and sounds. Be mesmerized by theater for youth from around the world. Learn new skills at the Circus School or the Imagination Station. Bring the whole family and discover the wonders of art. The Ottawa International Children's Festival, May 26th to 30th at Le Breton Flats Park. For more information and tickets, visit ottawachildrensfestival.ca.
CHO would like to thank everyone who pledged to our 2010 funding drive. Remember to pay your pledge before May 31st to be entered into the Via Rail draw for a pair of return tickets to Montreal or Toronto. If you haven't already paid, expect your postage paid envelope in the mail soon. Please send your check or money order as soon as possible. The May 31st Via Rail draw is fast approaching. Thanks to Via Rail for sponsoring our draw and to you for supporting your community radio station. CHO 89.1 FM.
It's the 5 o'clock train on CHUO 89.1 FM. I'm your host, Mireille Gervais, and I'm in conversation with my friend and colleague, Zachary Fouchard, who is leaving our community. He's leaving the SFUO. He will no longer be a student appeal officer, and we've been exploring why, what has led to his decision to move on to actually Carleton University, which is our rival university, who will be having Zach as one of their master's students.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations on being admitted at Carleton University, Zachary.
Thanks. I'm excited. I'm excited to start something new. I'm going to be studying full-time, which I haven't done in 2 years because I've been working at the Appeal Center. It's going to give me a lot of time to reflect on my experience that with working at the Appeal Center and a lot of time to write it all down. That's what I feel. I never have enough time at the end of the day. I'm so exhausted. I pass out on my couch every day at 4.
Hmm. Well, you're talking about being exhausted and seeing horrible things and moving on to better things. If I had to ask you what case hurt you the most, or when I say hurt, it's because I know you personally, right? You take these very personally and you get really involved and you live with these people, what they live, and you'll cry with them and you'll suffer with them. So what case got you the most?
Yeah, there's a number there of cases that I can think of. But one in particular was... a science student who wasn't your average student. Well, maybe she was. She was a student who struggled a lot in her courses, struggled in life. She had a lot of responsibility. She was a first-generation Canadian living with a single parent, but essentially she was the single parent, not not her mother. She had the responsibility of caring for siblings, I believe. And so she had more responsibility than your average student, but also just, you know, wasn't the type of person who thought straight and narrow. You know, everything that she said was very tangential, and it was hard to really get anything out of her. But once you did, you understood exactly what she was talking about. And then she wrote these letters that were long, like 20-page letters that I'd have to edit. And I loved reading them because they were so poetic, but that's not what's going to win the case, right? So I had to chop up these beautiful paragraphs just to get to the essential, the heart of the matter, break a 20-page letter down to about 5. And it was a difficult case for me because I dealt with her for maybe a year. And, you know, we went from appeal to appeal to appeal and just losing at every chance. And it wasn't that we were appealing different things. It started with one problem that had a consequence in 2 or 3 different areas. So there were 2 or 3 appeals based on this one single problem. And it was, the initial difficulty was that we got no support from the faculty ever. We lost all our appeals and were just sort of said, well, you know, sorry, there's nothing we can do for you. But to be a little more specific, I can remember a time where she had reached the maximum amount of credits failed. Within an undergraduate degree, the normal regulation is you can fail up to 18 credits. Afterwards, you are going to be withdrawn from your program. You're not kicked out of the university, you're just kicked out of your program, and you're told to do some part-time studies without, you know, the ability to get OSAP if you have OSAP funding, which of course my student did. So she, when I had met her, she had been withdrawn once, had done her time as a special student, found, I don't know, some way to pay for her studies without OSAP, and at the same time having to pay back her OSAP in small increments, and then was allowed sort of back in. But then when she met me, she was having to go through that again, because when she was allowed back in, she was allowed in her program, but she was on probation. And one of the stipulations of her probation was that she not fail any courses.
Mm.
Well, you can't go from, you know, having failed maybe 4 out of 5 courses, done a year of special student, to just be able to pass all your courses with A's or B's or even C's. Well, you know, a lot of people can, but not everyone can. And it was my opinion that here is a perfect example of someone who needs some help from the university, because it's just a student who isn't fitting in to the parameters of the university education the way we've sort of set it up. So the specific was she was trying to appeal a withdrawal again, give special reasons why she had broken her probation. True, she had failed a course. However, there were some very real reasons why she was just unable to pass that course. And if you could just, you know, let her into the program, she won't fail any next time, and really prove to the university that, you know, she belongs here. But we didn't go through the appeal in the straightforward way. We didn't want to appeal the withdrawal. We were sort of trying to think outside of the box. We said, instead of appealing the withdrawal directly, we'll try a prior appeal where we would appeal the failure of the course itself.
Mm-hmm.
We thought maybe if we had the final exam revised, if we could look at the exam, and we did, and we sort of found some areas where, that evaluation is a little strict. At times, the prof didn't exactly understood what the student was saying, because, again, she's so lyrical, writing lots and lots. And maybe the prof wasn't spending so much time reading these full answers, because, well, he probably had 100 copies to correct. So anyways, we attempted to do to appeal the failed course, so that if she could pass that course, she wouldn't have broken her probation, there wouldn't have been a withdrawal, and that the story finishes there. That did not work out, because the faculty sort of stepped in and said, hey, what the heck are you doing, Zach?
They didn't let you do that appeal?
Well, they did. They didn't ever say, you were not allowed to do this.
Mm.
They just sort of said, well, we've done the appeal and it's lost, and we really recommend that you go and appeal directly the withdrawal. And at the time, it's we had no power and say in this matter, so we sort of said okay. But the more and more I reflect on it, the more it was an instance of the faculty saying, you know what, this isn't how we do appeals.
Mm.
We do appeals along the lines of, if you're withdrawn, you appeal your withdrawal. You can't go in and apply for a grade review to try to avoid some kind of withdrawal. No, you're screwing with the system. And that's not at all what I think I was doing.
No.
What I was trying to do was think outside of the box and try to find a way that would have been easier for both the university and the student. Because once we appealed withdrawal, we lost and kept appealing higher and higher, and then there was another issue, and none of those would have ever happened if we had just resolved it there. So that's a case that's really close to my heart.
So you're talking about trying to think outside the box and a student not fitting into the box, and I think that's the main link that links everybody that we meet, and that brings us all together, is this idea of people who just, for some reason, whether voluntary or involuntary, they just, or because it's just the right sane thing to do, they don't fit in our university system. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, that now that you're moving on to do your master's full-time at Carleton University in the Department of Philosophy, I think that might be a little bit of what you want to focus on.
Definitely. The idea I've been sort of playing around with is a philosophy of deviance. You know, some kind of theoretical framework out of which one can understand deviance. And I don't mean deviance so much as disobedience, but just the idea that sometimes people don't fit in for whatever reason. And in Canada, we have a lot of examples of this, because we're a multicultural society. So sometimes cultures don't fit in with other cultures. And sometimes people's languages don't fit in with, you know, the institutional language. So the idea there would be that what if, say, for example, an appeal system, the norm of the system itself was not the ideal normal majority student, but the actual opposite, the most extreme and radical deviant student, not someone who is disobedient, but yeah, someone who is disobedient, but just more generally than that, someone who's deviant from the norm, someone who doesn't fit in, and it often, according to my experience, it's really not their fault. What if we made that the norm? Someone who can't fit in and needs help. That would be a great norm for an appeal process, because that's what appeals are all about.
Absolutely.
If you ask me. However, the reality of the matter is that's not what they're about in society, in the government, in public policy, and in the university institution. They're more about trying to be fair with decisions, all the while really hammering down the rules and making sure that the system chug-a-lugs.
Chug-a-lug. Zach, what are you going to miss the most from the community, from the SFU, from the student at Peel Center?
I'm going to miss all the interaction with the people. I'm going to miss working with a colleague like you, Mir. I'm going to miss working with the day-to-day people that I saw every day, the students that would come by the office. And you know, in my life, I'm a bit of a hermit for a few years, and then I throw myself back into the populace of society. And then it's a little too overwhelming for me, and then I go back. So I'm going to spend a year or two in a library alone, and then I'm going to get sick of that, and then I'll be back.
Sounds good. Well, hopefully you will still be around when you come back. It's been absolutely a pleasure to do this interview with you, to work with you for the last 2 years. More and more students are just, they want to talk to Zach. They want to talk to Zach. They know that Zach is the man. He's the most patient of the appeal officers and the most caring. It's been really a pleasure working with you, a real something special.
Thanks. You're very kind.
And thank you for coming on to the show. You've been listening to the 5 o'clock train. It's already the end of the hour, but stay tuned. Eventually, we will know who the ombudsperson is. We will get to know what happens to the clique of the SFUL, and the appeal center will continue to strive and survive.
Amen.
Amen. Check out our blog, trainradio.blogspot.com. That's already the end of our hour, but tune in. Next week, we'll be back, and Denis Ranco will be back from his conference tour in Europe. This is CHUO 89.1 FM, and thank you for tuning in.
Sharks.